So the hard thing about doing a podcast is that you can't always get all the stuff in that you want to talk about and the time limit allowed, assuming you have a time limit. But we at the dojo want to keep things under an hour if at all possible. And I wasn't really able to tell this story. It sort of dovetails with what Vink was talking about when he mentioned how his daughter is able to see her grandparents every day over Skype, even though she's only met them 3 times in person. I had a similar situation growing up in the 80s, where one set of my grandparents lived in Texas. So we only saw them once every few years, unless, you know, they came up and they were getting up there in years and wouldn't make that trip so often. So to ameliorate this problem, in 1988, I believe, my grandparents sent us a camcorder. And this is, you know, being the 80s, it was this huge clunky machine, not like this tiny little handheld things that we have now that are digital and mostly tapeless at this point. Far from being tapeless, it used a, you know, full-sized, you know, regular VHS tape. So what they would do with theirs in Texas was, you know, film things around the house and, you know, just tell stories about the things that they did there and send the tapes to us. And we watch them, of course, and then we'd use our camcorder and send tapes back. And at first, this was mostly, you know, the same kind of thing. Like, imagine like a 7- and 6-year-old trying to put together a video. My parents very rarely themselves actually filmed anything, strangely enough. It was left to us kids to actually manage all this and, you know, plan and direct and everything. So at first it was the same kind of thing, but eventually it morphed into something else. Keep in mind that this was the same camcorder that I mentioned during episode 26 of the podcast that I used to like film the ending of Legend of Zelda and Mario Paint to save all of my compositions. That was years after all this other stuff started, actually. I had watched an episode of Reading Rainbow, starring LeVar Burton, who at the time was also on Star Trek The Next Generation. And I did not realize for some reason that the Reading Rainbow guy was Geordi LaForge. Maybe you know, his visor was a big, good enough disguise for me at the time, so you can kind of understand the Clark Kent thing. Anyway, so having a camera, I wanted to do, you know, some of the techniques that they showed on screen, which naturally gave rise to wanting to do basically my own Star Trek video fanfic. And since I didn't have actors, my sister and I played with pound puppies a whole bunch, and they were like this vaguely anthropomorphic pound puppies that could talk and speak kind of like Scooby-Doo. I decided to use them as stand-ins for the different characters. So you had Cooler as Captain Kirk, and one we called Spike as Spock. A littler one called Chap that pulled double duty as Chekhov and Sulu for a while, I think. I don't really remember actually anymore. So instead of like sending back videos about life in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, instead we would send back videos of puppy Star Trek. And I think I did around a dozen of these, probably a little bit more. They were my first like really creative outlet that I could make other people watch. So I'd like work on this thing for I don't even know how long, like over a weekend or a week or two. And then I'd finally finish it and then throw it up, you know, on the television to make my whole family watch it. And, you know, being my family, they were very encouraging, of course, and wouldn't tell me what utter crap this was. I think my father stepped in, wanted to participate with me, possibly at the behest of my mother, but also to kind of raise the quotient, the quality quotient of what he was seeing. So we actually sat down and wrote a script first. And then he stood in for Spock and everything, and he let me stay like director of photography and everything. But he like tried to do a little more set design and making things in an alien world, like a little more alien stuff like that. So this is the actual episode that is available online right now on the That's Orange account. So it's linked in the show notes at famicondojo.tv already, and you can watch it there. It didn't stop there. There was also a feature length motion picture that was about 114 minutes long, which, you know, based on this experience, also had a script that ran out after about, I want to say 15 minutes, and then things kind of went from there. So that was about 20 years ago that this thing was finished and released. And you know, unlike now that I'm actually like, you know, making internet video, I didn't have editing equipment. You know, we just had VHS computers, at least, you know, PCs at the time really couldn't handle video editing. These are like $1,000 rigs we're talking about here. There were like these boards you could buy that would do kind of all the video switching and effects and stuff for you, but they cost hundreds of dollars easily, and my parents never bought me one. So I had to make do with everything that was on the camera. So those, like, you know, kind of boom mic on it already. That wasn't terribly great, but, you know, there was no alternate audio input. There was no editing. So if there was a mistake or something I had to, you know, do over, you actually had to run the tape back and record over what you had done. More often than not, the mistake would just stay in, and you'd try and alter the scene around it. but since all the editing had to be done by like just basically stopping and starting the camera, I stumbled on like really simple effects. Like if you, stop a camera, move things around in the scene or remove them entirely, you can make things seem like they've jumped or disappeared, because, you know, the background elements won't have moved. And, you know, learning later on, this is like a big technique for how to do like green screen, like multiple people, you know, split screen, and things like that that I've been using, you know, in actual videos ever since then. So I guess you can credit or blame my grandparents for giving me these tools at a young age and firing my imagination to a point where, you know, even though I wasn't able to do much with it for about, let's say, 15 years, when I finally got back into it, the first thing I did was plumb my archives for Puppy Star Trek, digitized all that stuff for posterity, so to speak. And then started in earnest on more lofty pursuits. And I guess I'll let you guys decide if those pursuits have bared fruit. Born fruit? You know, I was an English major. Keep listening to the Famicom Dojo podcast every Friday. And also the Powercast, which comes out about twice a month. And it is quite a bit longer, but they do a lot more focused things lately. Pretty interesting stuff, like the Masters of the Universe soundtrack or the Star Wars versus Star Trek definitive guide as to which is better. Oh man, that's about 2.5 hours long, but it's hilarious. And the language is a bit raunchier than this show. So since this is a podcast about kids, and what they should or shouldn't be exposed to, you probably shouldn't let them listen to that until they're at least 35.